The following views and opinions do not necessarily reflect those of Talk 1230 WYTS, its staff, management, or parent company, Clear Channel. Listeners should not use Dr. Kvitko's comments and advice in place of receiving an actual dental exam. Time now for Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS with Dr. Brian Kvitko. Call 821-1230. That's 821-1230 to discuss your dental issues. Now here's Dr. Kvitko on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Talk 1230 WYTS. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for getting up so early on this Sunday morning. Listening in, our show is called Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, and it's also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but We're Too Numb to Ask. So I figure you're home, you're not numb, and if you have a question, you can call us at 821-1230, or you can send us an email to dentallyspeakingontalk1230@yahoo.com. Now, today what we're going to do is continue a conversation we had back in late December with a Dr. Andrew Kelly, who is a North Carolina dentist and who practices in Clemens, North Carolina. And I'll introduce him or reintroduce him to you in just a minute. Before we do, I want to say that I'm very proud to say that my daughter was married yesterday to Corey White, who's a really great guy. And I know they're not tuned in because they're on their honeymoon, but I just want to wish them well. And it was a wonderful wedding and a wonderful reception, and I want to thank everybody that came and all the great wishes. It was a great time. Also, I want to wish the Buckeye football team. I wish you Buckeyes, Jim Tressel and the Buckeyes. Wish them well tomorrow. They'll be playing in the Fiesta Bowl, playing Texas. And I hope that they go out and just pound Texas. Nothing against Texas, because I'm probably going to have a Texas dentist on the show here at some point, and hopefully he won't know I said that. But we want to root for the Buckeyes. All right, so now today, and as you know, before we get rolling with our guest, I want to give Dr. Kvitko's question of the day. And because our question, or not our question, but our topic today is dental implants, I want to, I made the question of the day, something that has to do with that, and here it is. According to a survey of malpractice insurance companies, what percent of paid claims were the result of dental implants? All right. What percent of paid claims were the result of dental implants? And if you don't already know, paid claim means that the person who had a dispute or complaint actually received some type of a monetary settlement. Okay. All right. So remember, you can call us at 821-1230. Or email us to dentallyspeakingontalk1230@yahoo.com. Now, I'm going to go ahead and introduce my guest, reintroduce him to those people that were listening back in late December. Dr. Kelly is a graduate of California State University, Long Beach, and received his Doctor of Dental Surgery degree from Howard University. He received his advanced implant training from the Corvent Institute in Encino, California, and the Medical College of Georgia in Augusta, Georgia. He is a diplomat of the American Board of Oral Implantology, an associate fellow of the American Academy of Implant Dentistry, a fellow of the American Academy of General Dentistry, a member of the International Congress of Oral Implantology, the Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry, and the Academy of Osseointegration. Dr. Kelly is a published author, and he is a product evaluator for a number of leading dental implant-related companies. He was the dental director of Venker Hospital in Los Angeles, California. He has lectured on dental implants, history of dental implants, treatment planning, risk assessment, case planning, hands-on surgical, hands-on prosthetics, incorporating dental implants into your practice, Camlog dental implant system, recall maintenance, treatment acceptance, case selection, bone grafting, site development, and cosmetic dentistry. He owns and operates Cosmetic Dental Center, a private cosmetic and implant dental practice. Dr. Kelly was featured on the cover of Dentistry Today as a leader in continuing education. He is also co-owner of Dental Office Solutions, a dental staffing, consulting, and training center for cosmetic and implant education. Wow, that's a mouthful, Dr. Kelly. You must be a pretty busy guy.
I'm pretty busy, but I have a lot of fun doing what I do. It's really exciting for me, and it's kind of my passion, so...
Well, I think that it shows, and passionate, when someone is passionate about what they do, it usually adds to a much better result, I would say.
I think so.
As people get up and like what they do, they're going to do a better job, and that's the way I am, and it's the reason that I hire happy people to be my team members and try to keep them happy, because happy people are just better workers.
Absolutely, and it makes, and not only that, you can have fun at work. So if you enjoy what you do, it's not really work. It's just, you know, you're there, you're having fun, and you're getting paid to have fun.
Exactly. Now, the question of the day, I'm going to ask you to just kind of give your guess now before we take guesses from others. Do you remember the question of the day was, according to a survey of dental malpractice insurance companies, what percent of paid claims came from dental implants? Do you have a guess?
5%.
You're going to guess 5%. Okay, so you're guessing pretty low. And I'm going to write that down because we're going to get to the answer later. More often than not, my guests are pretty close, but we will see, huh?
Yes, we will. And I hope I don't want to be on the short end of that stick, though.
Well, exactly.
Especially with it being a new year, I want to start it off right, you know?
Well, that's a good, very good point. And not only that, and you mentioned the new year, and that's a good, I think that's almost the way that we should start off our discussion today, which is a lot of people make New Year's resolutions. I'm going to assume there are some people out there whose resolution is to take better care of their teeth along with themselves. Maybe some people want to get that smile makeover that they've been thinking about for years, or maybe somebody who's been unhappy with their dental office is going to go out and find a new one.
Yes.
Maybe they're going to get that throw that partial denture away and get an implant or an implant-supported bridge placed. So.
Yes.
And if that's the case, we're here to help them understand the process, and maybe we can be that little push to push them to pick up the phone and call.
I really hope so.
Now, if someone is listening to this podcast and they want to reach you, how would they do that?
The best way to reach me, go to my phone number is area code 336-766-7966, and my email address would be Dr. DOCTR2TH at triadbiz.rr.com.
Okay. Do that again. Say that one more time. Dr. DOCTR without the O?
DOCTR2TH at triadbiz.rr.com. So, yeah, so it's kind of spelled weird. There's no DOCTR. It's DOCTR2TH at triadbiz.rr.com.
Okay, and thank you for that. And then your website is actually ncdentalimplants.com, which stands for North Carolina.
That is correct.
And I won't tease you this time about what I said that stood for on our last show.
Well, I tell you what, you inspired me. I guess I'll give away one free implant a year, and guess what? I don't know. You have to come in and see if you're that person. How about that?
Okay. All right, so whoever's listening to this podcast, if they're paying attention, they can call you at 336-766-7966 and say, I want to be the one to get the free implant.
Right, and we'll let you know if you're the right person.
Okay. Well, that's right. They have to be a candidate.
Okay.
All right, so you might remember, I know it was a little bit ago, but we were talking about cone beam technology at the end of the last show, and I don't know that we gave it justice because it is, I mean, you explained it very clearly, and we talked about how it allows us to do our treatment planning within a quarter millimeter, but there are the questions we didn't handle, and I guess they would be things like, and I know this, and I know you know the answer. Is this dangerous? How much radiation does the patient receive? You know, what if I've already had a dental x-ray? Is it safe to have a cone beam scan? That sort of thing.
It's very safe technology. With cone beam technology, the radiation exposure is drastically reduced as compared to a conventional medical CT. It's not a continuous beam. It's actually several pulses, several hundred pulses. So the radiation exposure is down. It's safe to have a cone beam CT and have dental x-rays. There's no, I won't say there's no risk. There's always risk associated with things, anything, but it's minimal. It's no, there's no more radiation in a cone beam CT than you get from a conventional Panorex. They're pretty close.
Okay, I was going to ask you the equivalent. So a panoramic x-ray, which people are used to, they stand there, the machine goes around their head. It It gives you that big film, kind of a rectangular shaped film. You're saying a cone beam is very similar to that then?
Very similar.
Okay. Now, actually, I don't know if you know this. I taught in the dental at the dental school, Ohio State University, in the X-ray department for 20 years. Today, though, it seems like we're using measurements called millisieverts, and that wasn't a measurement that we heard a lot about back when I was teaching. But how many millisieverts is a Panorex?
Panorex is 10 to 15.
Okay.
And ICAT, I use an ICAT. The ICAT 10-second scan is 30 to 35.
All right.
Even the 40-second scan is 90 to 100, and a full mouth series of x-rays is 150 to 200.
Okay, and when you quote those numbers, are they using digital, or is that would that be using the old-style film developed in chemicals and held up to the light?
I believe it's old-style chemicals, and this is a study by, it was done at UCLA's Department of Radiology, and they compared the different doses, and I don't really know whether it's conventional, but I'm going to assume that it's conventional x-rays.
Okay. Well, I think most of those comparisons are. And, for instance, I know, and this is, again, just to kind of make people feel a little bit more secure about this, I know that a person receives the equivalent of 3 periapical films per hour when they're on a jet flying at about 35,000 feet. And so, using the old-style film that you would develop and hold up to the light, you would receive, in a trip, say, from Columbus, Ohio to L.A., you would receive the equivalent of 18 films or a full set of x-rays. Now, 3 per hour. And I don't know of anybody that would cancel a vacation or a trip because they were concerned about radiation, and yet people come to us all the time and say, I don't want the x-rays.
Right. it's amazing. But I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, the lack of information. People haven't been given the proper information. And once we take the time to educate our patients, most people come around. It's just the way of the world.
Oh, no. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it really comes down to that being passionate about what you do and taking the time to spend with people so that they are more comfortable in proceeding. They just want to know that you've done your homework and that they are going to be protected. So I think that's pretty good about the cone beam. Now, back to the implants. What would you say the life expectancy of a dental implant is?
I'd say that the numbers, the statistics say that at 10 years, 90% of those implants are still going to be in function. That's not necessarily true about a conventional bridge. I think at 10 years, about 50% of them are replaced. So statistically speaking, the implant has a 40% higher probability of being functioning and working fine. So that's kind of the reason I'm so passionate about placing implants.
So at 10 years, only 10% of them have to be replaced for some reason.
Yes.
And at 10 years, 50% of traditional bridge work has to be replaced.
Yes.
Okay.
That's statistically speaking.
So, and I don't know about your office, but in my office, if you're taking your typical 3-tooth bridge, which means one tooth is missing and you have one on either side, the cost of that bridge is only $300 or $400 less than the cost of an implant, one single implant, if the adjacent two teeth are healthy teeth and don't need a crown or a cap.
That is absolutely correct.
So for an extra $300 or $400, somebody can essentially more than double how long this product will last.
Absolutely.
Which means it winds up being cheaper.
Yes, it is.
Even though it's not covered by insurance.
That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
And you know, the other thing, you know, you put, when you look at it and you go, wow, you know, I have to get this done, but just think about it this way. You're also maintaining the bone, and what happens if you have that regular bridge and one of the other teeth goes bad, then it becomes a 4-unit bridge instead of a 3-unit bridge.
I actually had that happen to one of my patients just 2 days ago. So, hey, we're up against the break. Please hang with us. We are taking your phone calls at 821-1230 and also your emails if you want to email us. Guess us to the question of the day to Dentally Speaking on talk1230@yahoo.com. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on talk1230, and we'll be right back.
Just
Talk 1230 WYTS, you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. And our show is also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, But We're Too Numb to Ask. Hello, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko, and today we're talking about implants, and we're talking about implants with Dr. Andrew Kelly, who practices in Clemens, North Carolina, and has a very, very impressive resume. And before I get back to Dr. Kelly, I would like to give out some of the guesses that we have had while we were on break, some phone calls that came in. The question was, what percent of paid claims were the result of dental implants? This is a according to a study of malpractice insurance companies. We had John call in a guess of 14%. Frank sent us an email that said 10%. And Ida called in a guess of 9%. And Dr. Kelly's guess was 5%. So you can see he's pretty much, we're all in that same ballpark. And we'll see what the answer is here soon. And also, before I get back to Dr. Kelly, I just want to wish my daughter Heather and her new husband Corey many, many, many years of happiness. Their wedding was last night, and it was great. And Dr. Kelly, I appreciate you coming in and being my guest because... it makes it easier for me to just ask you questions than it does to just come up with my own. Because it was a let's just say it was a little bit of a late night.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
So, okay, now we in talking about these implants, and I think the next thing then we talked about how they the longevity is just phenomenal, and so then it leads to the next question, which is: are dental implants becoming the standard of care, or are they already the standard of care?
In my opinion, they're already the standard of care. I think at the very minimum, whoever your dentist is should be offering you the opportunity to have an implant. And if your dentist doesn't place the implant, they should refer you to the appropriate individual to have you assessed to make sure that you are or are not a candidate for dental implants. But here's my experience. Most patients are a candidate for dental implants.
Well, especially with the bone grafting techniques that we now have in the ICAT, the cone beam scanner, where we can, you know, place implants without even bone grafting. If you think a 9mm implant would work, let's say you can put a 6.0mm or 6.0 diameter implant that's only 9mm long, that's not bad.
Right.
And that's something, you know, years ago, if you didn't know exactly where that nerve was, you might just have avoided the area completely and told that patient, I'm sorry, you're not a candidate.
Absolutely.
So, and I agree with you. I think they are the standard of care. Anyone who's not giving you that as an option. And here's the other thing I'm finding. And this was with my brother-in-law, who went in for, he lives in another city. And I know about this because my sister, you know, called me and asked me my opinion. But he went in for an evaluation, and they suggested removal of a few teeth and did not even mention to him that he should consider having the socket preservation graft done. And because I asked her, is he going to get an implant someday? If there's even a slight chance that he wants an implant someday, he needs to have that socket preserved with bone particles and a collagen membrane. And, you know, you don't have to do it on day one, but just do that step so that you can always go back to it.
Absolutely, and it's important to do socket grafting because you never know. I mean, circumstances change, and we think, I don't want that implant. I mean, it's too much money. I mean, you may go out and hit the lotto. Who knows? Somebody's rich uncle may leave you money. Mm-hmm. Then you go out, and then you want an implant. We say to you, look, you know, in order to get it, now we've got to do this very extensive bone grafting procedure to give you adequate bone to place the implant. So if the dentist had just put a little bone grafting material in the socket at the time of extraction or soon thereafter, could have saved a lot of time and energy and effort.
Yeah. Now, what about, I mean, am I right? You tell me what your thoughts are on this. Aren't there instances where when you do this, these other bone grafting procedures, say a block bone graft, or you're trying to raise the height of the crest of the ridge to place an implant where there was no socket grafting done, it's not as predictable.
That is absolutely correct. I mean, you can try. Growing width is a lot easier than growing height. There's no guarantee there because the body determines what's going to work and what's not.
And you also mentioned about having how implants will maintain bone. Can you explain the physiology of that? We have a couple minutes before it's time for the break, because I don't think people quite understand that, why it's better to have an implant in your bone than it has to have nothing.
Okay. The purpose of the alveolar bone, or the bone that holds the teeth, is to hold the teeth. And once that tooth is removed, that bone is no longer being stimulated, and those bone cells tend to, they die off. And within 1 year of the time a tooth is removed, anywhere from 35 to 40% of the bone that was there is missing. But if you take the tooth out and place an implant, preferably at the same time you take the tooth out, that bone is maintained. But the other thing that goes with tooth loss is you get muscle atrophy. What that means is your muscles get weaker. So a person who has teeth can chew at about 400, anywhere from 250 to 400 PSI. A person who doesn't have teeth, over a period of time, their ability to bite on things diminishes to the point where at 15 years of not having teeth, people's biting force goes down to 5 PSI.
Wow.
And that's the result of having no teeth. The teeth stimulate the bone, and the bone stimulates the muscle. So if you don't have teeth and you don't put implants in, you lose that ability. But what they found is if you put in two implants to retain a lower denture, a lower full denture,
right,
after about a year, the biting force increases to about 75 or 80.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. See, I did not think about the soft tissue, the muscles atrophying. I knew about the bone, it won't, you know, it's gentle stimulation of touching bone or like biting down on these implants keeps the osteoblasts healthy.
Yep.
Those are the cells that grow bone.
Yep.
But I hadn't thought about muscle atrophy. Now, we're up against another break. So when we come back, I'm going to give some guesses that people have sent us to the question of the day, which is what percent of paid claims were the result of dental implants? This was according to a study of malpractice insurance company data. And you're listening to Dentally Speaking here on Talk 1230 WYTS, and we'll be right back. Talk 1230 WYTS, you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Our show is also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but we're too numb to ask. And so now's your chance. You're not numb, I assume, unless you drank a little bit too much last night, like those of us in my family did with my daughter's wedding. But anyway, we're talking to Dr. Andrew Kelly, and Dr. Kelly practices in Clemens, North Carolina. And he specializes, if you will, I guess that's not the correct word. He does a lot of implants and a lot of cosmetic dentistry. We have to be careful because the ADA doesn't recognize cosmetic dentistry as a specialty. And I don't think it recognizes implant dentistry as a specialty as of this date. Is that correct, Dr. Kelly?
That is absolutely correct.
And so I didn't want to get you in trouble with the dental board or anything. But that does lead me to my next question, which is, do dental implants have to be placed by a specialist, such as an oral maxillofacial surgeon or a periodontist? Who can place implants?
Any dentist who has had the proper training can place implants. That includes general dentists, that includes periodontists and oral surgeons, as well as even endodontists and prosthodontists. And endodontists are root canal specialists, and prosthodontists are dentists that have been trained to do crowns and different other restorative techniques, but any dentist who's been properly trained can place an implant. And since the ADA does not recognize implant dentistry as a specialty, no dentist can say, I am a implant specialist.
Right, including the oral surgeons.
Including the oral surgeons and the periodontist, absolutely correct.
Right. And now, what do you mean by appropriate training? Or I forget, I don't think that's the word you used, but how did you word that?
Adequately trained.
Okay.
Adequate training means, A, going and getting some information about the implants, and also there are different courses that are offered. But one of the way that I learned to place implants when I started back in the late 80s is I got a mentor, and I got someone who, you know, I went by their office, I mm-hmm. sat with them, they taught me how to do it, I was, you know, trained. I don't know, getting into the differences in training, like for instance, the oral surgeons and periodontists are now being trained in dental school to place implants, But that's something that didn't start occurring until about the mid-1990s.
Right.
And so now there are a lot of programs out there being offered by implant manufacturers. And I do believe that a dentist who has surgical skills, and I preface it by saying surgical skills, that means they take out, surgically extract teeth, and including some wisdom teeth, I believe that they can be taught to place a simple implant in about 2 days, a two-day training course, plus some follow-up.
Right.
And I honestly believe that.
I agree with you. I think surgery is surgery is surgery.
Yes.
If you understand blood supply, tissue management, if you understand suturing techniques, maybe a pre-op therapy such as antibiotics, preloading with ibuprofen or some type of a pain control drug. If you understand post-op management such as chlorhexidine rinses and tetracycline antibiotic therapy, it's really not rocket science.
No, it's not. I mean, I think any dentist that can surgically remove a tooth, given the proper training, and I'm not saying a lot of training, can place a simple implant. As a matter of fact, Detroit Mercy Hospital just finished a study a couple of years ago, and what they did is they introduced implant placement to the pre-doctoral students, and they also compared those results to the success rates they got in the perio and the oral surgery departments, and they found that the success rates were the same.
Oh, neat.
So it's pretty interesting. There's a lot of controversy out there about that. But, you know, the bottom line is you have, as the patient, I think it's important to go to your dentist and ask them some simple questions. How many implants have you placed?
Mm-hmm.
What is your success rate? And do you have some patients that I could talk to that you've had some success with?
Yeah.
Those are good questions.
Those are very good questions, and I think that getting back to if your dentist isn't saying to you you need to consider implants as an option, then you should wonder why. So
yes.
Even if your dentist isn't placing implants, they should put them out there. They should say, well, I don't place them, but I know somebody who does. Here's a phone number, or, you know, here's how you can find somebody that does, because you don't want to find yourself somewhere down the line with a bunch of healthy teeth that have been trimmed down, as we said on the last show, ground upon to use them as a bridge when you wouldn't have to if you'd had the implant.
That's absolutely correct. I believe that implants should be the first option. And, you know, given the success rates and the predictability of implants today, I can't think of any reason why a person wouldn't want an implant, especially since the cost is the same.
Well, and
or very close.
And that was going to lead. I have a couple questions. One is, how can patients get more information about implant dentistry? The other is, what actually do they cost? And we have about a minute and a half. If you can only answer one of those in that minute and a half, we'll come back to the other answer after the break.
I think I can get both. The best place to go get information about implants is go to the American Academy of Implant Dentistry's website, www.aaid.com. Also, you can go to the ICOI's website. There are several organizations, or just Google dental implants. That is probably the best place to get information. The cost for an implant, the range for implant placement, is actually anywhere from a low as of $1,000 to, I've heard, as much as $3,000 to place an implant. The national average is about $1,700 to surgically place the implant, and it's about $1,800 to restore it with a crown.
Okay. So 17 plus 18, about $2,500 for an implant and a crown.
Well, it can be as high as $3,500, but on average, it's down to about $3,000 for placing the implant and doing the crown. It's come down.
That's good, and which is, as we've discussed, is only a few hundred dollars more than having that three-tooth bridge that cuts down on the perfectly good teeth on either side.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's nice to know. Now, the second entity you mentioned, you said it was, you gave the AAID.com, and the second one was IOC?
ICOI.
ICOI. What does that stand for?
International Congress of Oral Implantology.
Okay. I knew I should know that, but I didn't, and I thought, well, I better ask.
That's okay.
Because what's the only stupid question? The one that wasn't asked, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, well, and you did great. Boy, you brought us right up to the break, no problem. Good job. When we come back, we're going to probably give out the answer to the question of the day. We have a couple guesses here. We have Jennifer called in a guess of 20%. Rudy sent us an email of 15%. What percent of paid claims were the result of dental implants? And we'll give you the answer when we come back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking here on Talk 1230 WYTS. Talk 1230 WYTS. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Our show is also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but we're too numb to ask. So today, we are talking about implants, and we're talking to Dr. Andrew Kelly. He is from Clemens, North Carolina. He was nice enough to get up early and be with us today on this winter day. And we want to go ahead and give out the answer of Dr. Kvitko's question of the day. But before I do, there were a couple more guesses that came in over the break. I'm sorry, before we came back. Bernardo sent in a guess of 1%. And Peggy called in a guess of 4%. And you might remember Dr. Kelly guessed 5%. The answer is 2.9%. So 2.9% of paid claims, according to a group of malpractice insurance companies, were the result of dental implants. That's pretty darn low.
Yes, I think so. That's very low.
Yeah, you guessed 5%, and it's less than 3%. So, good job at getting that close. What that says is that we've got a really good technique here. And I don't know the statistics, for example, on root canals or statistic. Oh, it's easy for you to say, huh?
Yeah.
On other things, and those might be questions of the day down the road. But 2.9% is not bad.
No, not at all. It shows that implants are very predictable, and it is the way that we're headed. And I think people, those numbers should kind of indicate to the patients that implants are safe.
Yes, and I wholeheartedly believe that. And it's so great. I just finished, I did my six-month post-op check on a gentleman who I placed an implant, tooth number 10. And this gentleman had periodontal disease around this tooth. You can picture it where the last 4 millimeters were all that was hanging in bone.
Yes.
And luckily for him and us, he had plenty of bone between the end of that tooth and his nasal sinus. And so I was able to place a 16 millimeter long, 3.8 millimeter wide Camlog implant up there. And I just took the healing cap off and just did a quick check so that I can refer him. It's one of my associate's patients, and the associate doesn't do implants. So I did the implant, and I just checked this gentleman. The tissues are pink and healthy and happy, and it's amazing how this is going to be the strongest tooth in his head.
Absolutely. I think that gives those patients some hope that have periodontal disease before. It's like, well, you know, you're going to lose all your teeth. But here it brings up an interesting question. You go, well, when you have a tooth that's loose, how much do you want to go through to try to save that tooth? I mean, how far do you go? Especially since we have dental implants, if you have a tooth that is compromised due to decay or periodontal disease, at this point, some people are suggesting that we take those teeth out and put implants in and save the patient multiple surgeries trying to save it.
Yes, yes. And I think there would be some people out there that would assume, well, if I have gum disease, if I have bone loss, how can I have an implant? Because I have bone loss. I don't have enough bone. And we've already talked about bone grafting and things. But
yes.
Here's a case with no bone grafting.
Wow.
And it was placed immediately because I knew there was plenty of good bone up there. Just wasn't any good bone left around his tooth.
Yeah.
And but it does lead me to my next question, or questions, which is, there are some people that maybe aren't the best candidate. There's three things I want to talk about. One is, and we won't have time before this first break to give all of them, but let me throw them all out there. How is there such a thing as being too old to have a dental implant? What about diabetics? Can they have dental implants, and what are the considerations? And what about smokers? What are the considerations for them? So if you can start with one and work your way through, that would be great.
Sure. I have patients in their late 80s who I've placed implants on, mainly, for instance, to attach a partial denture that has become loose because they lost one of the teeth. So I placed implants. There's no age limitation. As far as diabetics, yes, they can have implants as long as the diabetes is controlled. And so that's not a contraindication. Smokers can have implants, although they do have higher failure rates, but the failure rate is associated with the initial healing phase, and the research has shown that once the implant is actually bonded to the bone or osseointegrated, smokers have about the same success rate as non-smokers.
Well, that's good to know. Yep. And you did a great job, by the way, of answering those right before our next commercial break. So thank you very much for that. Okay, we are up against the break. When we come back, we want to wrap this up. Actually, there's so many things I might even ask you to come back on another day because I don't think we're going to get through this again. But it's just an interesting topic. You're listening to Dentally Speaking here on Talk 1230 WYTS with General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. And Talk 1230 WYTS, you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but we're too numb to ask. And today we are talking to Dr. Andrew Kelly from Clemens, North Carolina. He places implants and does cosmetic dentistry and has been spending most of his career, which is his passion, educating himself on new and advanced techniques so that he can provide the best care that he can for his patients. And the reason I had Dr. Kelly on is because that pretty much describes my approach to dentistry. And earlier in the show, we told people if they want to go to Dr. Kelly's website and or look up his phone number or call him, they can choose to be the first. If they're the first person to call him, they will get a free implant, assuming that they are a good candidate. And somebody that's interested in an implant here in Columbus could call my office at 262-9588, and my staff would be happy to get you scheduled as well. Now, so Dr. Kelly, what we want to do is try to pack a little bit more information in our next, you know, three and a half minutes. And let me just ask, if we wanted to have you back, could you come back another day down the road?
Absolutely. I'm excited about being here and sharing information, especially with the doctor as nice and knowledgeable as you. I'm more than willing to come back.
Okay, that's great. Dr. Tom, my producer, is going to mark that down, and we're going to hold you to that.
Okay.
Now, I wanted to go to smoking because can you explain why smokers are more at risk in the initial healing phase?
Yes, smoke has a lot of toxic chemicals in there, but one of the things that it does, it reduces the rate at which the osteoblasts can multiply. That's one thing that it does, but it also reduces, there's a thing called chemotaxis, which means the ability of the cells to move in the body. Smoking suppresses chemotaxis, so the healing process is flawed. Also, collagen formation is decreased, so in order to get healing, you've got to have collagen formation. And smoking just suppresses a lot of the physiological processes in the body. It's not a good thing, but the thing is, the body is very forgiving. So once that implant has survived that initial healing phase, the bone is able to go up against that implant and bond like it would in a person who does not smoke.
So if a person who is a smoker wants to have a dental implant, all they need to do is stop smoking, a couple days before the implant is placed, and if they can somehow manage to not smoke for the 3 to 4 months it takes for the implant to osseointegrate, they're good?
Well, no, I mean, even if they stop smoking, it's going to take 6 months or a year to get all that stuff out of there for them to even be considered close to non-smokers. So I'm not telling people to continue to smoke. I'm just saying that smokers are at higher risk. So if they do get implants and they fail, they're probably going to have to pay to have it replaced.
Right. Good point, because my policy is I will replace an implant if, in fact, it doesn't take in the first year unless you're a smoker.
That is my policy as well.
Okay, and then now diabetics, we have a glucometer in the office where we can check somebody's glucose levels. Is there, and you said there, as long as they're healthy and under control, so what number, because anything under 250, and is it important?
150. My thing is if their blood sugar is consistently 150 or lower, that's going to allow them to heal properly, unless they've demonstrated some ability to not heal, especially when they get cuts and stuff, then I'm a little hesitant. But typically, patients with blood sugar that is consistently below 150, I'm not hesitant at all to place an implant.
Okay. Yeah, and I wouldn't be either. And a lot of people tell you, though, that they're controlled, and then you take their glucose reading and you find out, and that's when they kind of admit, well, you know, I haven't exactly been all that good. So,
yeah.
You know, if you're going to spend the money, we want to make sure it's going to work. So that's why we ask those questions.
Yeah.
And, boy, very, very interesting. I really, really thank you for being on the show today and a few weeks ago as well. And, I will be back in touch because I think we would like to have you on again at some point. I want to thank my listeners for listening. I want to wish my daughter and her new husband, Corey, all the best. Thank everybody that came to the wedding and the reception. And I'd like all of you, tune in next Sunday morning at 9 for another episode of Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but were too numb to ask.